Okay, let's get started with this afternoon's work session. Welcome, everyone. First topic is economic development, and I do have some contextual opening remarks, unless you have anything, Andrew, for the good of the order. So I want to speak at a little more length than I did about some of the other sections of this budget review so far, because there's some important decisions here on the table, and we want to highlight those. I want to talk briefly about three areas of PDC that we're working on and that we want to discuss today. What PDC does, where it's doing its work, and how it will be doing its work. First, on the what. Our assumption is that PDC will continue to do both economic development and redevelopment work, and that we need PDC to be good at and equipped for both of those core tasks. The current budget proposal includes the same funding for economic development as we had last year. That isn't changing. We're getting ready to update the five-year economic development plan that PDC created in 2009. We're going to be hiring an outside consultant to evaluate the results of the first 5 years of that plan. And after that, we'll have PDC and staff from other bureaus work on updating the plan for the next 5 years. We're going to have a steering committee and a public process set up for this. And it's my intention that the new five-year plan will be for multiple city bureaus. Multiple city bureaus have some effect on economic development, not just PDC. So that's the what. We're going to stay in the economic development business, stay in the redevelopment business, update the economic development plan so that we know what the navigational instructions are for that economic development work for the next 5 years. Now, with respect to where, it's, as you know, it's my intention to move the urban renewal area capacity from areas that don't need it to areas that do need it. That is, areas where there's blight and underdevelopment, where we can create jobs, where we can create new development that creates future taxes. So I'm proposing a plan that balances multiple goals. Putting TIF to work where we need to make improvements and where we need to create jobs and grow the tax base, get money back to taxing jurisdictions now, because PDC has been absorbing a very large portion of available revenues, shrink the acreage that's in urban renewal areas, make some investments that assist Portland State University and make them sooner than we would have been able to do under the education urban renewal area as it was configured. Protect the amount of funds that are available for affordable housing. So those are the guiding principles behind what we are putting on the table about remodeling the structure of urban renewal areas. Focus the dollars where they can really make a difference. Get money back to taxing jurisdictions now and in amounts that will make a difference. Shrink the amount of the city that's locked up in URAs. Assist PSU by a variety of means, not just urban renewal, and protect the funds available for affordable housing. We've been working on refining the proposal that you've all seen and are fine-tuning it now, and you'll hear more about that today. We have made some modifications in that proposal that I want to flag, and that is we're proposing to reduce the River District by 30%, not by 15%. The net effect of the package as now configured means that we will be able, if we act quickly and if we agree, we will be able to put $3.5 million into the city and county general funds in the upcoming fiscal year. So this isn't just about improvement in the balance sheets of the general government revenues in out years, though it's about that too, and Patrick will walk you through the numbers, but it's about this next fiscal year where we'll be able to put $1.8 million more into ongoing general fund for the city and $1.7 more into ongoing general fund for the county, and we'll also produce more revenue for schools, though by the state funding process that actually goes to the state and is back distributed back rather than having it go directly to Portland Public Schools. And again, Patrick will go through that in more detail. Thirdly, the how. PDC is working on strategies for each urban renewal area that are more customized to the realities of each of those urban renewal areas instead of trying to make one size fits all. For example, trying to attract traded sector cluster jobs to Lentz hasn't worked. But there are other things in Lentz that will work, and that's what PDC is focused on now. So they're working on 5-year action plans for Lentz, Old Town, Chinatown, Gateway, and they're, again, engaging BPS and PBOT and other bureaus that have a stake in making those plans work. So that's those are the three key topics that I wanted to focus on, and again, that our panel here is going to focus on today, what we're doing, where we're going to focus, and how we're going to get those dollars making the most difference. So that's the proposal we want to put on the table, and in fact, got Scott Andrews and Patrick and Ed McNamara all here as resources to walk you through that and other key issues in front of PDC. So with that, let me turn it over to you, Scott, and take it from there.
Thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon, commissioners, advisors, staff. This is the sixth time that I've had the opportunity to be part of the PDC budget presentation with City Council, and I always look forward to this discussion about the what, where, and how PDC will be doing its work in the coming year. To put it into context, 6 years ago, we had 230 staff, including 60 that were quickly transferred to the newly formed Portland Housing Bureau. City Council had just adopted the first economic development strategy, and we reorganized the organization to reflect the priorities of the time. I think the first budget I presented showed both TIF revenues and budgeted expenses to be about $250 million. As you know, since that time, TIF revenues have dramatically declined. This is due to several urban renewal districts coming to the end of their ability to bond, as well as coming to capacity. TIF revenues are budgeted at just $60 million for the coming year, and about $350 million over the next 5 years. We've reduced staff to reflect that reality, and with the last reduction of 35, we now stand at a total of 95 employees. We believe that this scaled down, reorganized PDC is well positioned to operate with fewer resources and to focus on the priorities that have been established by City Council and the PDC board. But regardless of the changes in administration, we face a long-term resource challenge that board and management must address. We're probably the right size for the next 5 years, but we're going to need to come to some conclusions about PDC funding in the future in the next couple of years, or we'll fall off what we've been calling the fiscal cliff. Patrick?
Thank you very much, Chair Andrews, and good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Before I jump into the kind of quick overview of the two major topics for today, both our budget as well as the proposed changes to the urban renewal areas, I just want to kind of do a little agenda check, because I know we have other folks in the room here. So I'm going to walk through this, and my conversations with the different city commissioners, it seems like there's an interest in having the URA conversation immediately following the presentation. So we'll get into that. And then once that conversation is done, then we can move to the next topics on the agenda, which include Leah Treat's discussion of the downtown marketing initiative, as well as the PBOT freight strategy. And I know Commissioner Fish wants to talk about the Venture Portland aspect of the budget. So if that's okay, that's the way we're going to proceed.
Just, I had one question, because I got a briefing earlier this week on the budget. So is the principal change between the budget briefing I got and this briefing the increase from 15 to 30% in the River District?
That's from the URA change proposal. That's the principal change from what you've seen.
So that's not reflected in the documents I had previously. It's in the new documents.
Correct. Okay. Correct. Correct.
That doesn't affect budget per se.
We'll walk through that, but and I'll go quickly. I know that we've had a lot of conversation in one-on-ones around our budget, but I think it just for so everybody in the room has the same starting point. I have a much shorter version than what I shared with you earlier. So as Chair Andrews mentioned, our budget, we have resources and expenditures. PDC is obviously funded differently than most other city bureaus, so our primary source of funding is tax increment financing, and that comes to us in various forms, whether it be the long-term debt that we issue, which you can see on our pie chart here, is a very small sliver in the lower left corner, about 5% of the resources that we're talking about for the coming fiscal year. We receive TIF through what we call short-term debt, which is kind of very short-term borrowing based on it's pay-as-you-go, so it doesn't require us to issue long-term debt. And so that's a significant portion of the resources that we will have available in the coming fiscal year. And then the other big piece of TIF is really the debt proceeds that we've received from previous issuances of bonds that we still have on hand because of the nature of our project work. So we sell bonds and take debt proceeds in anticipation of projects, but oftentimes projects don't happen right away, and so we roll those funds over. So a large portion of what we will have in our larger budget is money either that comes in pay as you go or funds we've already received. And then in the green sliver in the kind of the bottom right is the intergovernmental revenues piece, which is largely city general fund, and then we get community development block grant money as well. But this is where the city general fund money shows up in our budget. So as you can see, it's a small percentage of our budget. The activities in there are quite important, but when I dive in this a little bit in a second, just understand we the larger budget conversation will happen beginning on May 14th when the city council sits as our budget committee. So this is not the only kind of crack at this topic. We'll have another full session on our broader budget coming up. On the expenditure side, once again, on the larger budget side, this takes all those resources, and this is how we are proposing through our budget to spend those. As the mayor mentioned, we still this distribution looks largely similar to what you've seen over the past 4 or 5 years. We still spend the bulk of our dollars on what we call property redevelopment. Those are the range of different redevelopment projects, either downtown or in the neighborhoods. TIF, if you recall, can only be spent on physical improvements, infrastructure, things like that. So it can't be used to fund operating expenses of community organizations or working capital for businesses. So it does largely drive our dollars into redevelopment projects and infrastructure. Infrastructure has become a smaller share of our budget in recent years because a lot of the projects, light rail projects, parks projects have already come and we funded them. So this is a smaller portion of our budget than it has been in the past. You can see the business development piece. It's grown over the past few years, but it still represents a smaller chunk of our budget. And then the other thing I want to point out is that the housing number here at 11%, a lot of people say, okay, we have a set aside 30%. Why is this 11%? So that the 30% is a cumulative number, and so it depends on what dollars go out in a given year. So in particular years, it may not equal 30%. I have a slide coming up that we won't go into detail, but you have it to show you over time how we're tracking against the set aside, and we are well above the 30% number. So this just happens to be a down year in terms of actual projects, and we have spent far more than 30% in previous years. So like I said, it'll even out.
Patrick, a question about TIF applicability. TIF can be used for the infrastructure, also for the planning for those infrastructure projects.
Yeah, correct.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you.
I'm sure if I trip up, my budget officer Tony Barnes will tell me. But there's certain limitations on that. But generally speaking, yes, we can cover those costs.
Just establishing that, because we're going to talk about the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability budget later this afternoon.
Yes, no, Susan and I have already talked about it.
Well, just my understanding is that you have to go directly from the planning to the implementation.
And then just so there's no questions about the big orange thing, we actually don't spend all the resources we have on hand in any given year, and we kind of budget against that. But it does give us the ability to use those resources in the event that expenditures are higher than we expect. Or in particular, and our budget is a roll-up of 20-some-odd funds, and so when you break it into funds, we have contingency in all those funds, and that adds up to this number, but it does allow us to pull money in if we need it. Those dollars roll over to the following year if they're not spent. And then the other way, just to look at the big budget, is by program area. We have tons of detail that we'll provide again in May on this, but this shows how we plan to spend our money by program area and by priority. And so the big purple slice we call Vibrant Central City is obviously the largest part of our budget. The reason why that's such a large part of our budget is it continues to include significant expenditures in large projects, things like the Veterans Memorial Coliseum and other projects. So the dollar amounts on projects are so much larger in the central city that it does skew these numbers. We still have a significant portion of our budget going into our neighborhood work and our traded sector work, but you can see where, you know, where when in the absolute dollar terms that a lot of the dollars still can still flow to large catalytic projects. I won't spend a lot of time on these next two slides, but I do want to point out that we do track, and it's available for conversation, how we're tracking on the housing set aside within each of our urban renewal areas, and you'll see they all have individual targets, and then we also do a cumulative total. The housing set-aside policy was updated in 2011. We changed the way that we calculate it. It's still 30%, but it is more of an aggregate number. And so that's all reflected in here. We can get into individual questions about where we're at, but you can see that we are tracking well above the 30%. As of this current year, the money that we have in our current budget will be at 36% since this beginning of the set aside. So that's where we're at. We also have included a second slide that deals with what the housing set aside will look like under the mayor's proposed changes to urban renewal areas, which will move housing dollars around. And while the near term dollars might drop a little bit, the longer term forecast shows a growth in our housing set-aside expenditures. This is a lot of detail for this short presentation, so I'm happy to return to this. But this is how we kind of track the set-aside. So now I want to spend just a minute going over our general fund request. As the mayor mentioned, the request is basically what we received last year, and so with one exception. And so last year we had money converted from one time to ongoing, but then there was a general reduction. We've adjusted our programs to match those resources, so we're comfortable moving forward again this year with the same set of resources with a slight adjustment. The one addition, the one add package, is the $100,000 that we are requesting for what's called here neighborhood economic development grants, but it's really grants for three different business districts or community development districts that we want to add to the current community development and business districts that we support. So those three areas are Old Town Chinatown. We believe providing operational support to the neighborhood association is an important part of our Old Town strategy. The second area is Lentz Town Center. As part of our work in Lentz, there's been a strong growth and interest around managing Lentz Town Center like a business district, like the Main Street program that we currently have in place. And so we want to provide operational support for that. And then the third one is the most recently announced desire to create a business district on Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard around the Killingsworth-Alberta cross-sections. And so that's in the formative stages, but we believe that's an ideal place to apply some of the Main Street principles that we've been working on in Alberta and in St. John's and Hillsdale.
Would you be allowed to use TIF for those purposes?
No. I mean, we certainly can't use it. No, I'm sorry. Those are all, I'm trying to think. Those are all within urban renewal areas. But no, for purely operational support for those organizations, the answer is no, we can't. Having the combination of a business district doing certain activities and having a TIF available to make investments is a pretty powerful concept, and you can leverage the work that a business district does. But no, we have to have separate dollars for those.
Patrick, you earlier admonished us that there's a budget proceeding to come, so you want us to focus on this,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Can I just pose a couple of questions?
Sure.
I just want to go back in history. So in 2012, 2013, we converted what was historically one-time funded to ongoing, correct?
Correct.
And then we took a cut?
Correct.
So this represents what percentage of what you, roughly how much of a cut did we take? You know,
a little over 20%, I think. There was some add back. We deferred some money.
Yeah, with the deferments, it was about 23%.
Yeah, about 23%.
So the good news is we put it on solid foundation with ongoing. The bad news is from your point of view, we took a cut.
Yeah.
At what point do we get, we may have already received it, but when do we get additional data on the jobs and leverage components of these dollars? Is that to come in the next budget presentation, or is that just something we can request?
We'll definitely bring it for the next presentation. I mean, we have those numbers. We report on them certainly annually, and we can break it down by whatever program category you want on this. So Main Street or yep. NPI, certainly traded sector work, the entrepreneurship work, we can report on that.
I think that while there's, you know, we're supportive of all these programs, some data that just shows the jobs and the leverage so that we can distinguish among them. You and I talked the other day about the small business working capital, and we hear from a lot of people that they'd like, that one of their biggest challenges for small businesses is access to that working capital. And could you or Scott comment on whether there are some opportunities as the economy continues to rebound to build up a fund that could be used for sort of revolving short-term capital needs of small business?
Yeah, I mean, we've historically received, as part of our general fund allocation, money to put into a small business working capital. You see the line item here at the bottom. That was one of the areas that was deferred last year, and so it's being restored this year. Generally, it's been in this, you know, in this range or maybe a little higher in some years. So I don't know, how much do we have in our fund right now for working capital on this general fund funded one?
The general fund for this year?
Yeah.
It's around $150,000
$200,000. Left over. So because it's kind of, it's an annual appropriation that isn't a long term, like we don't have permanent capital that we can count on. We do a handful of loans a year, but we can't make it widely available. So if we had more of a permanent funding source and a larger funding source, then we really could promote the program knowing that we could actually meet the demands of the program. So my short answer is yes, there's demand for it. We haven't been able to really promote it because we don't have the reliable funding for it because it's not TIF eligible.
So what I would ask is that at some point, could you give us some feedback as to, you know, if we had the resources, how would you like to scale that program?
Yep. Okay.
What is a appropriate level of investment? And it may even be something that we can fold into the consultants review on economic development to look at other cities and how do they manage it? Because we keep hearing from small business that working capital is really vital, and particularly for businesses that get shut out of conventional borrowing. Mm-hmm. You know, what role can we play? And I would love to know what a more robust program would look like if we had the resources.
Okay. Great.
Yeah, and these are not grants typically. I mean, I sit on the Finance and Investment Committee, and they're loans that we make. Now, we don't get them all paid back, but the goal is to get as much paid back as possible so that we can recycle and continue that to happen. And it happens in lumps, but they're not giveaway programs, they're loan programs.
So, Commissioner, with regard to your first question, I mean, I do have a little cheat sheet here on the metrics, but I only have one copy.
See you later.
So what we'll do is we'll send it to everybody on council immediately after this, but it summarizes all of the metrics for the general fund funded programs, as well as other things like the enterprise zone and whatnot.
Thank you.
So.
Contingency is not used up, could that be funneled in, or at least part of it funneled in the following year to go into the working capital for small businesses?
It's all TIF. So everything that's in contingency is tax increment financing, so it has the same limitations, so it can't be used for working capital loans.
Why are several of the line items for the requested budget less than the Cal target?
I'm trying to find where. I think we've shifted money around in part to make sure that the MPI line items were fully funded.
Well, it isn't though.
Yeah, the first one, NPI, is at this year's budget versus the Cal target.
It's 20,000 less.
20,000 less at the whole neighborhood.
But it's the same as we had last year in terms of the...
Yeah, but why don't you get your Cal target like everybody else?
So we're moving we're moving money into different buckets to...
Oh, I see. That was in part to refund the small business working capital?
No, that's gone down too.
No, it's gone up from nothing in this year's budget to 154 proposed.
Yeah. Which line?
So there's a slight increase in the overall traded sector budget.
Right.
So it's like $30,000.
Right.
Just a slight and an increase of $30,000 really in the neighborhood subtotal, but because we're asking for another 100, that total comes up to 70 higher.
Right.
So you can see the overall is $100,000 higher for the entire program. They just moved the money a little bit around to match the demands more.
Right, and so we have added funds to the cluster line item. We have funds that we get from the enterprise zone. So the enterprise zone is a little bit of a tangent, but it'll be relevant. Has a community development, a community benefit piece to it. 15% comes back in the tax abatement. 60% of that goes to WSI for job training for companies in the enterprise zone. The rest of it is money that we can use for business development in the areas adjacent to our enterprise zones. And so we're able to use some of that money to support the local business districts that are adjacent to that. And so we're able to augment the money that's in there. It's in the MPI line item. So we're not lowering the funding for MPIs overall. We're just using fewer general fund resources than we could ask for.
That line item also includes that apparently we one-time funded the Hillsdale Main Street last year, and so that wouldn't be included in the Cal target, and yet it's gone up there. So I guess I'm just interested in where you shuffled money around and why.
Okay, I think I can get you a more definitive answer. I mean, or I can maybe ask somebody to come up and answer that. Why don't I ask Kimberly Branham to come up and answer that question?
So the question is, why did we increase a little bit? So partially on the NPI and Main Street, I think the sense was that we could basically use the same amount of resources that we received last year, and that there has been a real increase in need for the business technical assistance as a result of some of our NPI and Main Street work. And so we did increase a small amount, but we did increase the amount to the small business technical assistance.
But you did work, you decreased over, it from the Cal.
Oh yes, from the Cal. But over last year, and then increased it to help backfill some of the CDBG reductions in the adult and youth workforce. So we started out with our 13-14 adopted. And looked at what we could actually deliver, and then basically backed into our 14-15 that way.
So last year, when they took the cut, it came out of the areas like cluster development. I mean, if we were to put in 12-13 in this, you would see that the reduction was mainly taken in on the traded sector side. So partly that was the attempt to get back some of the funds that we had lost in the previous year.
You could get a list of what got shuffled, where, and why. Okay. That would be helpful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I'd like to ask.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about Gateway. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a URA. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask if you thought that was the best use of a URA, what was happening in Gateway, whether it should be one of the enterprise zones. And I just, there's a lot of concern about Gateway and the way that it has not really progressed. There has been some recent infill of medical buildings and technology, so it's not completely stalled. But it feels like it could get a little more attention. So I'd like to ask what's going on with Gateway. And while you're thinking about it, tell me about the Gateway Education Center that the neighborhood has been trying to partner with with the city on for years and years and years, and it never seems to get any traction. I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
So as the mayor mentioned, the gateway is one of the areas where we will be producing a five-year action plan on that to kind of refocus our priorities for gateway. So we agree that the results in gateway have been underwhelming in terms of the impact of urban renewal. That being said, there are activities going on. We've begun to focus on the Halsey-Widener corridor to understand how we can help better activate what's going on in that business district. The inflow of new parks STCs has allowed parks to move forward on projects there, and so we were able to put money into the new Gateway Park that will go in Gateway. So that it's good to have TIF money to be able to do that. Otherwise, I don't think that project could have gone forward. And then we continue to think about the transit center and the area around the transit center and how we can promote development there. And while there is activity, I think we continue to bump up against challenges of, is there enough demand for new development there to support something like the education center? So we've had a number of conversations with different potential institutional partners, educational partners, but there hasn't been a critical mass of potential tenants to really drive the development of a new building there. But I can tell you that, without being able to talk about specifics, that the interested parties are still out there. We continue to get new interest, and we're working actively on something that might happen there. It wouldn't end up being the Gateway Education Center that everybody thought, but it could end up being something very similar, commercial development near the transit center that might have both commercial and institutional tenants in there, including educational uses. Mm-hmm. But it remains a priority. I know the mayor's been actively involved in some of these conversations as well. Mm-hmm. It's not, like I said, we recognize that more needs to happen in Gateway.
I appreciate your saying that. And do you think it's a matter of leadership? If there's interest, there's a swirl of people, there's starting to be a time of economic growth, do you think this might be the time to put some attention in that area?
Let me jump
in. Yeah, let the mayor jump in.
If I might constitute not completely fresh eyes on these issues, but maybe eyes that had a break for 10 years. As Patrick said, and I said, we haven't yet seen the results we want in Gateway or Lentz. In each case, the strategy has to be different in terms of the kind and the scale of development that can happen. We also need, I'll put it fairly directly, we need private property owners who are willing to work with us and make real things happen. As opposed to imaginary things that haven't happened. So I think we have that alignment now in both of those districts, and that's why these two five-year action plans aren't, I hope, going to be shelf studies, but are indeed going to be carried out with development in a much better development climate than we've had in the last 5 years. So, one part of me says we can't make it work now. Shame on all of us. But also I think we have, we're being realistic about what's the kind of development that really can happen in Lentz now, what's the kind of development that really can happen in Gateway now, and do we have partners, public or private, who are ready to step up? There's some very large pieces of property in Gateway that are now perhaps in play and able to be developed, and I think that's mm-hmm. the other thing that's sort of breaking our way.
And I just want to say that the neighborhood is very happy about that, and I love the word realistic, but I also want you to consider the word vision. So put those two together, and don't sell Gateway short, and don't settle.
Yeah, you're right about that. No, I don't think any of us are interested in just settling for any old kind of development there. We've all put too much on the table in terms of a good vision for both of those districts. Mm-hmm. Point taken.
And Katie, if I could just add, in part because of people like you keeping our feet to the fire, we did go out and acquire the land for the park. We did master plan the land for the park with a bold community vision, and then Commissioner Fritz has now found a way to pay for it. So I think there was some vision, and it was very much from the community that got us to that point, and that I think is a success story in Gateway.
Thank you. And I have, it's kind of the flip side. I wanted to ask if you had anyone devoted to the idea of displacement. You know, if you do your work well, Gateway is going to boom, the East Side is going to boom. What is going to keep the city from becoming, you know, a monoculture of middle class folk? And I'm going to be asking that question of almost everyone today.
Okay.
Because I want to find out who in the city is really looking at this, whether it's something that is going to be little pockets of people saying, we need to do something, but nobody that's really in charge of this issue. It's a big issue in East Portland.
So I think it's a great question, and I'd like to say that we have a lot of people who are working on displacement. We have two different neighborhood teams. One is our neighborhood redevelopment team, and we have a community economic development team, and the combination of the two is designed to make these action plans happen in our various neighborhoods. At the same time, think about how we, in the process of doing that, our work is creating opportunities for existing business owners, existing property owners, both commercial and residential, so that when these neighborhoods prosper, it's local residents, local property owners who are benefiting from it. The work is challenging. I don't know anywhere around the country where they have good answers. I think people are trying lots of things and grappling with this issue, but it is one of the priorities of our neighborhood work. Everywhere we go, we're not just going in blindly saying the goal is just to drive development here, regardless of who benefits. It really is a thoughtful approach to what kind of development can happen for the folks who are living in our neighborhoods. Obviously, the conversation that came to the forefront in North and Northeast Portland as a result of the Trader Joe's development really brought this out as well. And so I think part of our response on that has been its sense of urgency about it, but also, you know, maybe one of the initial areas to tackle is to really think about what's going on with housing prices and try and make sure that we're constantly adding to the supply of affordable housing so that we can continue to maintain housing affordability in the areas where we're going to experience those kind of displacement pressures. And housing affordability becomes one of the fundamental issues when you talk about displacement. And so that's kind of our first, like, let's see if we can really dramatically change what's going on in affordable housing supply within North and Northeast Portland, but we're working across a number of fronts, and I'm happy to follow up more detail on what we're doing in our neighborhood prosperity initiative districts or Lansing Gateway around the same topic.
So who in your organization would be the person that would say, that would be the person who's kind of in charge of making sure that that doesn't happen? Or well, in the whole city of Portland, who's in charge of thinking about displacement? I mean, really, honestly, it shouldn't be just the PDC.
Right. Well, if I could supplement that a little bit, Patrick's response. You know, this is an issue of intense interest to the Planning and Sustainability Commission.
Right.
There's a lot of policy work going on in the comp plan around this. You know, we've been really benefited by some of the great work that Lisa Bates at PSU has done in developing quantifiable measures of vulnerability to gentrification displacement that have started to work their way into our plans. I think I mentioned Cully the other day, where through the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative and some rezoning, we're trying to instill new commercial vitality in the neighborhood without causing displacement, and working very hard with community partners like Verde to do that. So, you know, I think we're still assembling the toolkit. We have to be honest about that, but there's a lot of focus in a lot of places.
Yeah, and I guess I don't want to cut you off, but I mean, you're raising a big subject. But
I
and
am.
This, and this is not a I'm not shining you on with the statement. I mean it.
Uh-huh.
I reject the premise of your question, even though I understand it's coming from a good-hearted place. That's, to me, a little bit like saying, who's in charge of thinking about racial equity in the city? I mean, actually, I want each URA manager to be thinking about displacement. I want the PDC commission members to be thinking about it. I want all five of us, and we are, thinking about it. I want the planners thinking about it. So the issue of how do we have policies, plans, and strategies that actually try to get in front of displacement is a work of many people, and that's not passing the buck. That's making sure that everybody's thinking about it. So I think it would be dangerous to assign that to a handful of people it's better to actually make sure that we do what you just did, which is raise it up, and then make sure that the strategies actually match that goal.
Mm-hmm. But I thank you, Mayor. I just want to raise it, and I also wanted to make sure that because of the fact that you have different bureaus and there's PDC, all these different entities working together on something that nobody knows how to do yet.
Right. Right. And the default mode of it's not my department is not where we need to end up.
Right. Either. I'd hate to have people go, oh, that was so sad. We could have, because I think a little bit of that has happened in the past.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And now we have more awareness and we have more history, recent history of what we want to do differently.
Uh-huh.
So okay. I, you know, keep raising it and look for it in both this discussion and the formal budget presentation, you know, on May 14th and on everything else.
Right. And Katie, I think there's one other piece, which is it's one thing to flag the issue. It's another to say, what are the intentional policies is the city going to apply to this district? So we have a toolkit. It's not the toolkit we want because we can't do things like inclusionary zoning. We're missing out on the biggest bull run in multifamily development in Portland's history. Without the one tool that almost every city has used to build in affordable units in opportunity areas of the city. We don't have that tool.
Because of the legislature?
We and everyone else are preempted from doing it. So we could think of voluntary measures, but that raises issues of things like density and height and other things. And there are community concerns to take into consideration. Not everyone thinks that building up or broader is a good idea generally. We've tried things like no net loss with some mixed success. You can declare in an area there'll be no net loss of existing affordable housing. One of the problems with our displacement data is that we actually don't track people who are quote-unquote displaced to where they may be displaced to. So we look at aggregate data. And aggregate data doesn't tell you that Mrs. Smith was displaced from 97205 and moved to somewhere else. It just says that poverty's shifting east. But it doesn't tell you whether someone moved to Vancouver or Beaverton or Centennial. But those policies of intentional around displacement are what you're looking for, not someone to track the data, because the data is happening. All you have to do in Lentz is go see the changing mix of people in the neighborhood association and some of the changing composition of some of the homeowners. There are changes afoot. What are the intentional policies that are going to say that we're not going to uproot people involuntarily? And that's not just someone watching the data. That's putting in embedding in the policy things that say we're going to track it. And right now, we have a scarcity of those policies in place in places like Lentz.
Okay. So I would like to ask that those intentional policies be made.
Okay. So I'm going to move to the next presentation, but I just want, when I end, I just on this one, I just want to acknowledge, so we're going to follow up on Commissioner Fritz's request. We'll give you a better breakdown of where the funds are moving from different categories. Are there any other requests of information on the general fund request before I move on?
Can you pull up page 2 for a second? Patrick, the grid on page 2 in terms of your requirements. Everybody here celebrated the PDC work in keeping Daimler here and expanding their footprint. Where does Daimler fall? What color does Daimler, which of these slices does Daimler fall in? Is it the red for business development? Is it the blue for property redevelopment? Or is it both?
No, it's business development. So there is a gray area because when we make loans, we can make loans as commercial real estate loans or we can make them as business loans. This one happens to be a loan to Daimler for their project, and so that's in the red pie chart.
And does that include any of the physical improvements that we're going to be financing?
So our money, we're lending to Daimler, and that'll all be physical improvements.
Okay.
That's all.
So Daimler would fall in the red?
Yes.
Where would, say, a mixed-use development on MLK, we have a number that we've financed over time, we've had trouble getting tenants, and they're in various stages. Where would a typical MLK mixed-use development fall in the...
Well, if it's not something that's funded through the set-aside, it would be in the whatever color, property redevelopment.
So that would be in the blue?
Yeah.
And
the light blue, yeah.
In the light blue. So is there some way for us to determine the nexus between job creation as a part of the property redevelopment mix?
I think we can probably talk.
We can
probably talk about
that
on the 14th. I mean, we've tried to do that in the past in terms of tracking job creation related to that, and it's an inexact science because when you make a loan on a building where you don't know the tenants, or the tenant mix might change, it's inexact. But I think we can probably estimate that, and we can probably can get that to you. I think.
I guess just conceptually, and we don't have to settle this today. Yeah. I'm just interested in. For the dollar we invest in the red for business development, what's our usual expectation in terms of jobs? For the dollar we invest in the blue, what is our ability to quantify the jobs impact of those investments? I know
okay.
there are other values.
We can talk, yeah.
I'd be interested in some your thoughts on that in the next
okay.
session.
All right.
So I just have one quick question. On the Neighborhood Prosperity Initiative, and this is something that we raised in our review and have raised in past years, one of the things that the budget office has talked about is whether the way that MPIs are set up is the most efficient from an administrative perspective. And if I'm, you know, and set up as essentially little mini urban renewal areas, tax increment districts, there is some additional sort of cost and process around that. And if I'm reading the numbers right, I mean, I think for this next year in 14-15, you know, you're estimating just a little under $300,000 in tax increment revenue, and there's about $485,000 of general fund sort of going into those districts. After having the experience now of a year or two of running those, do you think that setting them up as urban renewal, you know, districts is the most effective? Because there are other alternatives, right? We could just create a special district and spend general fund money in that district accomplishing many of the same things. Do you have a sense of, do you think this is the right way to do it, the way we set them up?
I mean, I'll get a quick answer. I'll give Kimberly a chance to answer as well. I mean, I think it's too early to tell. I do think we have the current experience where some of the MPI districts don't have any growth in assessed value, so you're not seeing the benefit of creating urban renewal areas. So at this moment in time, you could make a stronger case that there might be more efficient ways to fund those. Off the top of my head, I probably can't articulate the county's a participant in this as well. So it would be a county-city partnership that would have to replace what we have because the county shares their revenue-sharing piece of it as well. So I do think that that's also a unique aspect of this that we would have to replicate in some other form.
You know, I'd also say that there's something to the fact that there are many urban renewal districts, that's very meaningful to those communities versus some sort of special district. Because there's long been a desire for PDC and urban renewal districts to do more in the neighborhoods. So it's a little bit symbolic as well, but I think it's important.
Thanks. Pick on the one urban renewal district. All right, see that one's up there. All right, let me see if I can run through this quickly and get the conversation because I know people want to talk about this. So the other presentation that we have was on the mayor's proposed changes to the urban renewal areas. Many of you have seen this multiple times. I'll try and go through it quickly. But for those of you who aren't in the room, I'll just jot through it, though, who haven't seen this before. So the proposed amendments actually touch on six different urban renewal areas. The first category is really reducing or eliminating a number of districts. Airport Way is a closed district, option three district, so no more debts being issued. We're just kind of spending out the remaining dollars and as they become available through our existing assets, releasing as much assessed value. And I'm going to use the term releasing assessed value because that's literally what we're doing. It does translate into acreage, but it's not one for one, so just so we can use that term. By releasing AV, it allows that corresponding acreage to be available for future urban renewal, doesn't bring anything back to the tax rolls right now because it's an option three district. We're already returning everything that we don't need to pay to cover debt service and the bond, so that's already flowing back to the taxing jurisdictions. This is simply just shrinking the boundary so that we don't have this excess acreage sitting in urban renewal. Second one, as the mayor mentioned, is a significant reduction in the resize of the River District. We're estimating that we can get up to about a 30% reduction in assessed value. For, in more simplistic terms or more kind of lending terms, my background, the River District is basically over collateralized. We have far more assessed value than we need to support the maximum indebtedness for the district. So this is a recognition of that fact, and thank you. And tries to make the district size pretty much exactly according to what we need for maximum indebtedness. So this does allow us to still meet the priorities that we have in the River District, but returns dollars back to the taxing jurisdictions immediately. There's a table that summarizes this in a second. Willamette Industrial.
Before you move on, I understand that that doesn't have any impact to the maximum indebtedness nor to the last date to issue debt. So if we didn't do this, what happens to all the money that would be in the assessed value that you're not going to be using for debt?
It continues to pay for the activities in there, and so we would issue less long-term debt because we have access to basically the pay-as-you-go, the increment that flows in on an annual basis.
So we would in essence pay off our existing debts faster.
Yeah, we can't defease it. I mean, I don't know if you want to answer this question. You really can't. I mean, really wouldn't be able to pay it off any faster. Any reduction in the 24-25 date for defeasing the River District is really the earliest date under any scenario and to maintain maximum indebtedness. So you still have to borrow something to get, even with the full district as it is, to get to maximum indebtedness. Under the reduced scenario, we have to borrow more, but we could still pay it off by the same date.
Could you just explain defeasance for those?
Defeasance is paying off the bonds. But technically, defeasance is different than paying off because we're not actually allowed to pay off certain bonds until a certain time frame. So we would have the money to pay it off, but we actually couldn't retire the bonds.
But then what would happen to that money?
We can spend many hours on this topic. The money that, if we collected money to pay off the bonds, but we couldn't officially pay off the bonds, we would sit on that money until such time as we could pay off the bonds legally or without penalties. And Jonas here is going to tell you why we don't want to pay off bonds early and take penalties, because it affects how bond buyers view the city's municipal bonds. But we would sit on that money until that time.
Right. So Patrick's essentially correct. But defeasance, the difference between paying it off means it comes due and you make the payment. Defeasance means we essentially put the money in an escrow. So the bonds are technically still outstanding. People still own them. But we've already put the money aside to make that payment. So the effect of that is you might release some of the property tax collections a little bit sooner. In the River District scenario, the mathematics don't really play out that way. And Tony, you may know more. I think it's maybe like a year difference.
Yeah, it's about one.
Yeah, about 1 year difference in continuing sort of the status quo now versus the 30% reduction scenario.
If we didn't do anything, we would have more tax availability than we need to pay off the bonds.
Correct. We would be collecting more in the current near-term years than we actually need to support the bond payment. Correct.
So then we would actually be just spending that pay-as-you-go.
Yeah, it depends on the timing. I mean, that's why it depends on the timing of the expenditures. So one of the things that we do when we say leave it as it is, we can really take on a whole variety of projects that we have on our list in River District pretty much whenever we want. If we say we're taking 30% out and so we... but still maintaining that maximum indebtedness, then we really do have to time it so that we take on projects, and so the money is only available when the increment is available. So it constrains our ability to do projects whenever significantly. So that's one of the trade-offs in this. Then the current scenario, we really can take on almost any project that you have on the River District list at any time.
Okay, thank you.
Can I ask the debt manager a question, a little bit like yesterday's dog and pony? With that caveat?
Sure.
When you do debt management for PDC, how impactful would it be to you if the city got a flu before you did some debt for them?
So all of the city's various categories of debt have their own individual bond ratings, as you know. They're all essentially notched off of or based upon the city's AAA top-level issuer bond rating. So to the extent there was an illness in the city that affected the city's general bond rating, that has a probability of impacting all city bond ratings.
So just to put this in terms I can understand, everybody's feeding off the same trough in terms of full faith and credit?
Correct. So the AAA rating is the benchmark which all other ratings are based on.
And the AAA credit rating is the gift that gives to everybody?
Yes.
And if that is compromised in some way, it potentially impacts all the other debt services?
That's correct.
Thank you.
I'm a little bit confused by the chart on page 6 where there are districts you're not proposing to amend, but I think you are.
Is it okay, Chris, if I could get to there, or do you want to jump ahead of that right now?
Okay.
Just because I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page. I can go more quickly, but I just want to make sure everybody's in the
just
same.
That's fine. We've been kind of all over the place, so I lost my track.
That's okay. I appreciate it. So Willamette Industrial, proposing closing it down. This is a district that really hasn't had any activity. I think we're admitting that it may not be the best tool for the harbor, but we'd like to see if we can use the assets that exist in the district to help the manufacturing community in the harbor in a different way. So there's no long-term debt. That can go away immediately. It has a small bump for the city general fund.
Was that the district that once upon a time hoped to stimulate some silicon wafer business?
Yes. The education of rural area, there's been a lot of discussion of that. This basically takes, we would take 35 acres and place it in North McAdam, and then the rest of the district would shut down. There's been no debt issued on this, so once again, this could happen fairly immediately. We are actively working on, as the mayor mentioned, trying to meet a set of PSU priorities through the amended North Mac district, so this is not, should not be construed as abandoning in any way the city's commitment to PSU. This is simply trying to accomplish their objectives through a different vehicle, and one that actually shortens the life. The slide that Chris is talking about, we can talk about, shortens the life of urban renewal significantly. So we can maybe get to that in a second. And then the two other districts on the next page that we're talking about expanding, as the mayor mentioned, it's really about trying to align TIF dollars where we believe we have the most opportunity in the city. And those two areas we believe right now are the Central East Side and North McAdam. The combination of light rail opening and what's going on in South Waterfront, particularly around OHSU and the opportunity in the neighboring Zidell property, make these two areas important areas for the city to have resources to invest in. On a relative scale, we don't think, particularly in the Central East Side, this is a significant amount of new money, but it does allow us to play a strategic role in development along the new light rail corridor, which we believe is an important area for job growth in the city of Portland. The North McAdam opportunity, I think, has been covered quite extensively publicly. It's in some respects a once in a generation opportunity to be able to invest in our major research institution and the surrounding commercial activity which will happen there. The impact of these changes, we have it summarized in two different ways on page four. One is this is the kind of net to the taxing jurisdictions. So positive numbers mean money flowing back to the taxing jurisdictions. Negative is negative relative to the status quo. Contribution by urban renewal area. So you can see where the changes come from. The additions come from the River District, Waiura, and education urban renewal area changes. The Central East Side and North McAdam expansions take money from the taxing jurisdictions relative to the status quo, and the net, you can see we've netted, the net is a positive over this time period, about 30 years, present value about $67 million of positive impact to the various taxing jurisdictions. And then the bottom one just shows how that benefit would be distributed across the primary taxing jurisdictions, and the cities is on the left, and roughly the same proportion as the county, so you can see how it benefits the city and the county.
So, Patrick, I asked you the obvious question off this when we met the other day, and perhaps you could just give this body the answer. You look at this chart, and you you see that from 26 to 30, we're $61 million in the hole. So essentially from 2021 to 2030, it's a net of, we're underwater $53 million. That sounds counterintuitive. Could you just explain that?